pictures. They usually have a painter in Acre. They don't come. So I'm happy to see all of you looking so healthy today. I was told to speak about healing as I do it in the Sufi order. So that's where I'm going to start off. But I will be telling you the Sufi methods because that's where I come from. And that has been my discipline all of my life. In the Sufi healing, the person who does it, whether it is a mother or a friend, a guide, a teacher, caught in a first aid situation, and very seldom is it a doctor, but the home healer and the caretaker are the people I think that I'm mostly addressing today. Healing depends upon attitude of mind, attitude of heart, and condition of the soul. The first necessity in the healer is to get beyond the type of empathy that one makes one associate with the condition. Even though if we're dealing with a child, the child is screaming, or if it's an adult, they are in shock and have glazed eyes and a very fearful look on their face, the first thing to do is to remind them that they are God's perfect child in God's perfect universe, and that no harm will come to them. Repeating, you're all right, you are all right. Not you're going to be all right, but you are all right. The Sufi believes that this is best reaches the soul through the left ear. So we always put our mouth to the left ear and say it very softly. You're all right, you are all right, you are God's perfect child in God's perfect universe. No harm is going to come to you. I've been caught in positions where there was an accident near my home or even on the highway, and people tend to stand around in a circle and just look and not do anything. I always go immediately to the person who's pinned in that car, or if they're not pinned in the car, to the person who's in the driver's seat of the other car. Remember, it's just as traumatic for the person who's driving and hit somebody, maybe even more than it is for the person who's injured, because he may be unconscious at the moment and only his spirit aware of the shock. But that person must be told the same thing, that he's all right, that the situation is in hand, and that everything's going to be all right. Reassure them immediately, even though you think they're not in focus. And the second thing is that you must not let yourself look at the situation. You're taking it in, but you're not looking at it to attune to it and recognize it. The moment that you recognize the condition, you put a stamp on it, psychologically and mentally, mental impress on the person who is injured, so that the assurance in your own being must be that you see it perfectly healed. This takes vision and concentration to do, and it takes a lot of preparation ahead of time, because the breath has to be channeled clear, the heart has to be kept pure, and you have to be a clear reflector of your own philosophy. So that's something that you're building all the time, so that when the time and the moment comes, you've got it ready and you can use it. In order to do that, one has to be willing to help the condition, and you are seeing with the outer eyes what the condition is. For instance, if the person were bleeding extremely, you would know, you would use your pressure points at once, right? But always try to cover that from the person's gaze. Keep your gaze locked to their gaze. Use the glance. When the Sufis talk of the glance, they mean the practice of inhaling the rays of the sun daily, of inhaling the sparkle of the diamond sparkles that you see on lakes or waterways, walking along the paths, brush your fingers along and bring it up to your heart as you walk, Keep your hands out, held limply, so that as you walk, the magnetism of the earth comes up into your hands, to your heart, and then goes down again into your legs. That, I think, should be done all the time. Reversing that you are pulling up the magnetism of the earth to the heart, that it's then going down through the arms, that the hands are always held limp, no will. You see, Sufi healing differs from other healing in that we are not laying on of hands people. Rarely has that ever been done. And if you're among a group of Sufi healers, as one time I was, they'll come down all clobbering on you and remind you that you're not practicing Sufi healing. Because laying on of hands is seldom done. And I think in my entire 50 years I have used it twice. And then because the inner voice or the inner spirit worked through me. Will. Because we believe that if the channels of breath are clear, if the person has inhaled the light through his eyes, has built the glance strong so that the whites of the eyes, so that the rays from the eyes are shiny, and so that you have that within your heart and being to let it out to the patient or the person you want to be healed when it's called upon. So that too is something that you're always building and always working at to keep it high and to keep it clear. We know that when we infants, it is the bonding between I and I that is the greatest healer in the world, first of all through mother and father, and then later through caretakers. In the Sufi seed centers, that was part of the initial training, that everyone knew how to use the glance and how to build the glance. That meeting of the eye of the infant or the child who is hurt, or to any adult, all adults become children when they become helpless. And injuries to arms or legs really psychologically set them back into this toddler stage where the assistant nurturing by the hand, assistance in walking or holding on the joints of the body. You see with the older person, just the opening the hand and putting it, the palm open on the elbow as you walk with them, gives them not support, but encouragement, strength, inner knowledge that there's someone there to support them if they fail to support themselves. And of course, empathy is in that too. Now, when we have the picture of the condition so that we can immediately do first aid on it, then the second thing that we must do is the immediate reassurance that they are all right and they're going to continue to be all right, and to bring the presence of the Holy Spirit into it through your glance and through the practices that you have maintained long before you ever are out there to handle any healing. Then, because the magnetism of your body has been kept strong and high, and your electromagnetic field is solid, you can heal. At times when you know that you are not in that condition, you should not heal another. Many people come and offer to heal me, to work on me, when I'm not well, and politely I have to assure them I appreciate it, but make some excuse, because I have seen their aura and know that the electromagnetic field is not in that condition, that they have anything to give another. So in other words, your cup has to run over before you can heal another. That means that the practices which keep your heart still and calm and tuned to the divine guidance must at all times be worked on every morning and every night of your lives if you're going to be any kind of a healer. It also means that at times when you feel that you're off, pull back. There isn't anyone that does not go through cycles. There isn't anyone, regardless of age, that doesn't go through transitions. These are our traumatic times that make us back up and feel that we are not making progress. We see everybody else making progress and we feel we're going backwards. Something like sitting in the train station, and you know how you'll sit in the train and you'll see the car next to you, and you look out at that, pretty soon you say, my goodness, are we moving? You know, your feeling will be that it's your car that's moving out. And then you look the other way, get your perception right, and look back again, you'll find out, no, it's a car. The train next to me is pulling out, and I'm still standing still. Or it may be vice versa. This is a trick that's forever played on us, the difference between vision, insight, and perception. And for those that have insight, it is much easier to heal than those who do not. But one can be a good healer without perception. One can be a good healer without vision. But one can be a much better healer if one has both insight and observance through the senses of our body that make us a good healer because it gives us symptoms and diagnosis that's our own. And because we are healers through the hands, chiefly, and the eyes, and because that power flows through our body, it's necessary that we be kept clear. This means that after you have worked on a child, or an adult, or in any type of healing work, I found the very best dismissal of psychic energy of any kind is just to use plain salt. Not Morton's table salt, but sea salt, natural salt. Put a little bit on your hands, rub them good, and be sure that you interlock fingers because in between the fingers, impress often holds. And then after you've done that, no drying, just as we do in Sufi ablutions. Don't dry on towels, but simply shake the hands clear. And as you do when you are under those air dryers, let the air dry for you. By pulling one hand up over the other, very lightly, towards the joint, towards the heart, always drying yourself this way, not down. Push off the water in a downward movement, then work up with the fingertips until it dries. And then you are clear of any impression from a former patient or anyone that you have been working on, not to carry it on. Part of not drawing to yourself magnetism or fear impress, which you carry along with you. I want to say a little bit about working in hospitals, hospital visitations, and working in hospitals. The healer there must come in together, joyful and happy, and with some little thing that you can bring with you and leave with them. Often because we have never gotten out the cards of the healing phrases from Hazrat Inayat Khan, I will simply write a phrase on a little card. Or if it has a stamped design or a little watercolor painting of it or even a pressed flower that's stuck to one side of the card and then write the phrase on that card so that you have something to leave at the bedside table when you leave. Hopefully your patient will be so quieted down that you won't want to wake them up by giving them something. But if their eyes are still awake and they're in a good place, you might hand them the card before you leave. Always encourage the patient by telling them that you have come to give your healing energy to them. Are you in a mood to receive it? Because the Sufi healer never lays it on someone who doesn't ask for it. In other words, if you want somebody to concentrate for you, pray for you, do visualizations in the Sufi work, you ask for it. It isn't taken for granted that you want everybody to work on your case. And that has not to do with pride, but it has to do with the patient's heart being open to receive. Healing is a two-way street. The person who wants to be healed has to open himself to the healer. And then the healer can come forth and do his thing. The healer's thing, as we call it, is not his own. It is his attunement which makes possible the divine light. In the Hebrew teachings, we call it the Shekinah, that light which went before the ark through the wilderness, that light which walks before us, that light, Al-Anwar, the light Al-Anwar, which, like a pearl of great price, rests above our head glowing when we have developed it, and always there to be called down through the crown chakra to the heart and to be put to work. When the person has accepted that, you go ahead. If they have not, you just sit there and have a visit, a pleasant visit with them. But if they have asked for it and want it, then you can go to work. There are many objects that you can use. You can use the magnetism of your own body by putting your hands up to your shoulders and snapping it down into the fingertips 10 times. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm alternating now, right? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I see some people doing it at this part of the arm. No, the shoulder blades have the greatest light of our body, on everybody. The greatest, and this is why I always say, I think this is the remainders of our wings of light that we had in the angelic kingdom before we descended to be men and look at all the differences and distinctions in life. But that light still remains. And of course, on healers of any power, you'll see it very strong out of the shoulder blades and back, as though it were the remainder of their wings of light is still there. So when you want light in your hands, you pull it down from the shoulders. That pushes the magnetic powers down to the fingertips, so that you're, after you've done that 10 times, and you listen, feel, sense, your fingertips, you'll feel a tingling there, just a little pinpricking tingling in the tips of your fingers. And that means that you have pulled the magnetism strongly to the fingertips. And then you may take the arm of the patient and, doing the same, you've snapped it down on your own arms, now do it on the patient, but very, very lightly and softly. Not with the snap you did it on yourself to gather that energy, but very softly with the fingertips coming down the entire arm from the shoulder blade, from the height of their light body, down to the fingertips. And say, you know, 10 times each, or study the patient, and when you will see the look of almost an infant who in chakra massage or etheric massage has that heavenly look in their eye, like, oh, this is so delightful. I'm just loving this. And it can be done on any age level person. Remembering that the most deprived sense that we have is the sense of touch. It seems like it's the largest organs of sense. Every part of the body is included in it. It is not a sensory organ like our eyes or our ears, which have a beginning point and a cutoff point, right? But it covers the entire body. So that when you work from the shoulder light down to the fingertips, the entire body is affected by that. In the American Nurses Association today, they call this therapeutic touch. And there are Sufis in Mississippi and in the, throughout the southern states, to my knowledge, who are this year for the first time, by request, teaching it to nurses and teaching it to therapists within hospitals, AMA hospitals. And we take this as a great step forward in healing, that at long last it is recognized that man has a magnetic body, that he has a body of light, and that he can, through empathy and desire, use that to heal another. In the American Nurses Association, where records have been kept of it, and of course the Sufi never works with the idea that he's keeping records on something, unless he's in a school system where he has to, right? Because it wasn't ours in the beginning, and it isn't ours when we leave. It is a light of God flowing through us, using us as a channel of healing. Therefore, there is no ego in it, and there can be no ego in it, because the person who says, I healed anybody, will soon lose it. No natural healer can rest upon that. He is merely an instrument. I like to teach it that you think of yourself as a hollow reed, from the fontanelle down to the bottom of your feet, and keeping that channel all the way clear, so that in your walking you are aware of the earth's magnetism and of the power that comes from Mother Earth, and as the Indian says, you are never forgetting Father Sky and looking to it any day, wherever you are, that the light comes to you or the beauty of nature touches you. For that is the creation of the Divine Beloved, and it is his way of reminding you that you too are his creation and his instrument, and that through you he heals, he learns, he expands his consciousness. This is one of the finest things that you can bring to the mind of the cancer patient, who, first being told or realizing within himself that he is terminal, must come to terms with giving up a physical body. The quicker that will is given up, and the sooner that that desire to expand his consciousness into his spiritual body, and the sooner that he can be convinced that he has an astral body or a spiritual body to walk into, in which he will have memory, he will have vision of his beloved ones, he will be able to travel between the planes unhampered, without pain, without the constrictions and the imprisonment of a physical body, the better it's going to be for you to do your healing. This, regardless of whether it's a terminal patient or whether it's a patient that you know has a healing span that he has to put up with. 40 days can be a long time if you're in casts, you know, or strung up on pulleys. That person, regardless of his condition, needs the touch, the therapeutic touch, and the light coming through the fingertips. In working with infants in the infancy school, in the Marin Infancy School, for 3 years, where we had 37 children from 6 months to, say, 18 months or 20 months, because since we had open doors throughout the school, any infant who was ready on his feet and ready to walk into the preschool any day could walk in there. And when they sat down at a table and could stay put for 5 minutes, they then were allowed to start their first concentrations with a group. The child tells you, you don't tell the child. That goes for the patient, too. The patient tells you, are you listening? Because when the patient tells you something, he has many ways of making that known to you. It may be through any one of the senses, not necessarily through speech. In fact, seldom with a chronically ill person or a person who is really deeply working on himself, which everyone does in the beginning, right? We all try to heal ourselves in the first phases, and particularly if we're on a spiritual path, because the desire there is always, healer, heal thyself. That if you are a healer and something's wrong with you, you are pushing yourself very hard to prove that you can heal yourself to yourself. If you can't do that, you always have not to have pride in asking others who are healers to help you. But you also push off the ones that you know, that you sense or feel, have not got anything to give away, because then you are being a thief. It's like taking the last sip of water out of the canteen because you're so thirsty and not sharing it, even though it has to be just wetting lips and not being able to take a sip. It's very necessary in hospital visitation that you have an object that you can use. I personally love crystals, and I have introduced them to many healers in California. Wherever I travel throughout the United States for the message, I always bring crystals, I always hang them, and I don't lecture on them till people ask me questions about them. But the crystal is such a wonderful reflector of the sunlight that no matter how ill a person is, hanging a crystal in their window to catch the light and to reflect those rays to them can fascinate them and temporarily capture the vision. You know, all visualization begins with capturing a ray of light, where whether the psychiatrist uses it on a piece of a disc of shiny metal or whether we use it as a crystal, many objects reflect light and give off a ray. They capture the outer vision of the man, and in capturing the outer vision of the man, allow the healer then to work through light and through impress and through patterning, repatterning from those times when first fears began. You know, many of us have conditions which cannot be cured by medicine simply because the impress at the great developmental levels, 18 months, 4 years, 5 years, when the child should be and is naturally attuned very much to the mother as the ideal. The 7th year, when the father ideal becomes so important and the child turns to that father image for the ideal of his life. When that ideal has not been met, when that nurturing at any one of those phases isn't met, God has made a very wonderful plan to take care of it. It simply recycles. Those cycles in the first 2.5 years are much closer than they are afterwards. But from 2.5 years until puberty, those cycles are stretching out further and further. And by the time that puberty comes along, we have a 10 or 11 year cycle the rest of our lives. This is based upon the sun, again, not accident, but the cycles of the sun, to which we have in our body and in our beings and in our realization, and which becomes more and more clear to us as we progress on the path, when we then are able to close our eyes and pick up the sun's rays and that bright center of the sun within our inner eye, and to extend that and throw it out again. Inayat Khan taught that concentration visualization was attained when you could visualize and in your mind's eye push that concentration, that visualization, out before you 4 to 6 feet and bring it back by will. If you have studied contemplation and concentration, before you have gone into visualization, you will see how long that takes you to do it. It takes a great deal of centering, clarification of the channels of breath, a great deal of devotion to the Divine Beloved as an instrument of healing for it to work. The best healers that I've ever seen have been reconstructed bodies, people who have gone through the next to death or through death's door, have been redone and come back again to serve in a capacity they never dreamed they would. There are healers in California who are very successful businessmen in big industries, who after retirement, maybe a month or 2 months after retirement, have suddenly felt the healing power coming through them and coming out of their hands. And they are what we call natural Sufis, because although not initiated or following that path, they know they are a channel only. They are a hollow reed, and that the light is the power. The magnetic power of healing is running through their bodies and out of their hands, and they do not touch. And they either use an object of reflection or they use the light flowing through the fingertips to heal. Now, there is another type of healing that is given besides the positive reinforcement that we spoke of, beside the work of the light of the eyes, the divine glance to that individual, sending hope, encouragement, love above all else, and also to pull in, to inhale in from the glance of that person's eyes into your own heart that fear that you see within them, never settled, maybe never settled from the earliest of transitions, before they were two and could even remember it may have happened, and to exhale back again to them the divine light into their eyes and into their hearts. It can be done with a crystal. It can be done with different objects. Even to bring a flower, which is light, to them is a good idea. I never like to use red flowers, but I think that white flowers and yellow flowers, golden flowers of any kind, roses that we call the talisman rose, you know, in America is known as the Sufi rose, and that's a beautiful apricot rose, variegated bud, a long bud. But any of those are also an entrancement, because even one flower given to the individual to catch his eye and touch his heart with the light and the color of nature when you're bedridden and stricken and can't get out can be a tremendous encouragement to you. So many people think they have to send a flower arrangement, and it's always got a lot of colors, and something's always about to die in it. And if they don't have a relative to come in every day and take out the dead things, that is pulling the very thing that we should be feeding it. Because we must remember, as we attend, we tune ourselves to the vegetable kingdom, that we are dependent upon it, and it's dependent upon us. Every time we inhale in this forest, we are inhaling what those trees have exhaled. The exchange of carbon dioxide gas and of oxygen is imperative to our life and to theirs, so one does not live without the other. Therefore, it's not necessary to take a whole bouquet with half-dying things in. It's necessary that you take one vibrant thing into the very sick patient. And that's meaningful to him because it catches his eye, encourages his concentration, brings the beauty of God, and the healing that beauty gives to any patient is there. Better to pick up one small leaf and use it as your concentration for the day when you train yourself as a caretaker or a healer, than to have a whole bouquet of flowers distracting the concentration, the object's shape, and the ability of that part of nature to transmit to you its essence. The other thing that is most necessary is that you know when to leave. So much healing is overdone. It does its work and then it goes beyond the point. The point to where that healing is finished is when you see a certain wall, and it's usually what you feel rather than what you see, but many patients will show it by simply closing their eyes, and you know, you can feel by the touch that they're pulling back. Their magnetic body is pulling back. They're closing a door. When you once get the idea of when that happens, you'll walk out before it happens. That's very necessary that you sense that, that you study to see at what point does the patient fail to inhale what I am giving to him. At what point does he put up the wall to say enough, no more? So many times with the very ill patient, short periods are better than one whammo. Of course, there are people whose magnetism and will and nature tell the healer that he does need that big whammo to start him off, just like we'll give a triple dose even in naturopathic drugs or herbs to give that one jolt and then pull it back and give small doses more often for over a longer period of time. Now, when we work with infants, very sick babies, and there is more and more cancer among infants, among children under 2 years of age, there is now AIDS with children newborn. We have many conditions to work with in the infant that are new to us, even to this generation. I can't feel that there is anything that works better than the glance and the therapeutic touch. It makes advancement. In the American Nurses Association's records to date, they have found that one half the time in healing after surgery is present in all patients where therapeutic touch has been used. So I think it behooves us who are the Sufi healers and working the natural ways to have the courage to use more of it. Many of the cases that are cancer cases in older men that I have followed visitations with, not always Sufis, but always of some religious background, either sometimes not practiced for many years, but in their illness bringing them back to the divine being, they will tell you, it isn't the suffering, that it isn't the fear of death which gets me, it's the suffering to get to dying that is really the hard thing for me to take. So I think, and I see more and more in hospitals where a few years back, even 4 years ago at UC Hospital in San Francisco, where when I would visit very ill Sufis who had had surgeries or transplants or heart surgeries, things like that, kidney transplants, the people in that hospital, both the aides and the therapists and the nurses, would hover at the door, a whole group of them, and watch me do the Sufi healing with looks of real wary look, to say the least, and some of them with the feeling of, what in the world does she think she's doing? You could read the glance and know what they were thinking. Today, when I go in, they're there to learn. They're there to watch it and to learn what they can learn. So we are going through a period when many of our methods, never taken seriously before, are very welcome in institutions. they themselves, the institution staffs, nurses and doctors and aides, are using more and more of the love technique. In the last cases I was in the Salinas Valley, every time they walked into the room, they would walk up to the patient and say, "You know, I love you." Really express love and look in their eyes. Where would you ever see that 4 years ago? Never in California in any hospital, including Stanford and UC, would I ever see any therapist or aide walk up to a patient's bed and tell him he was loved. Every time they come in the room. Because love is the greatest palliator of fear, and love is the greatest fear palliator of pain. It has to be said from the heart, and it has to be expressed through touch and through the eye, not some vapid thing that you write on a card unless you have to and there's no other way. But if you have to write it on a card, then those cards should go almost daily to the patient. And not just saying, "I love you," but some recall of an appreciation of this individual, why you love him. In other words, you are a loved and loving being. You have a purpose that you have served in my life, and it may be a tiny thing that you can think up, but let them have that impress that they know they are loved and appreciated, wanted and needed. When I worked in the state hospitals as a psych nurse, and not only when I took my training, but afterwards in the years that I, 4 years which I spent working from ward to ward, 10 weeks in each ward, rotating, because I was working for units and my college demanded that I do that, I got a chance to work with every type of a patient that was in there. And I felt even with patients that are so-called mentally ill, and even those who were in terminal conditions from venereal disease of heredity or long-standing conditions, and they were simply picked up and used to run through the halls carrying garbage or picking up wet bedding and wet diapers to deliver them to the laundry. The getting on a mantram and a chant, they themselves chanted to themselves, sometimes mumbled, and you could hardly hear what they were doing. But to start humming, I found this true with infants, sick infants, with children, and with adults and very chronically ill people or hopelessly ill who are just living their lives out in an institution. If one can hum first, it's the best thing in the world to do, because you capture them on a rhythm that's not words, that's not asking them to do anything. Maybe you just have one hand over theirs on a big push cart that you're pushing, and they're just touching your hand. With many of them, I could only put out my pinky and touch them at first, because the feeling, the psyche, was so disturbed that any touch of another magnetic body just make them jump out of their skins. Starting out with a finger, then a little bit more, till my hand could go under theirs, so they felt the power was still on me. Put your hand over theirs and you've lost them, but tuck it under and they still feel they have control when they can hold you. So many times with people who are disturbed mentally or emotionally, putting your hand, offering the hand, and insisting on making contact with the palm of the hand, or in cases where the hand may be clamped down on something, just getting a finger in there, just pushing a finger into there, getting it there, then finally getting the hand under. Always remembering that power is in the hand of the person who has the palm over the palm of the other person. Whether it's true or not, this is what they're thinking and the way they're accepting it. So this is the way we apply it. Then to start the mantram in humming, so that you get a very little simple tune that you hum. And we love the Sufi lullaby, Ishkala Mabud Lala, which you can start out. Then softly, Ishkala Mabud Lala. Ishkala Mabud Lala. The jerky movements, the holding themselves off, the pulling back from contact gradually relaxes, even if it as an infant does, who is teething or who is in pain when we hold the infant, heart to heart. There are many patients that you must have the nerve, if you call it that, the courage, to walk through the stiff veneer or wall that they've put up. And they need that heart-to-heart hug. They need you to take them to your breast, hold them to your own heart. And if you can't sing or you can't hum, then whisper to them, Ishkala Mahbud Lila. Love God. Forget self. Love God. And God will love you and lift you up out of the condition that you are in. This is important for them to hear and to feel and to know. And it has to be repeated many times. Rather than putting up the wall that nothing is wrong with you, you're going to be well tomorrow. I felt this was the hardest thing that I ever did when I was asked to go into Christian Science hospitals in San Francisco, where it's a big hospital, very well furnished and attended. But the attitude of positive impress was absolutely overwhelming to the person who was really in intense pain. And since drugs were not used, to try to tell somebody that you're not in pain when you're in agony is not exactly the way to go about it from the Sufi viewpoint. Better to use therapeutic touch, use the glance, pick up through empathy and the breath. Be strong enough that you can inhale a part of that pain by the hands, by the touch, by the eyes, to pull that pain into yourself and offer it up. But you cannot keep it in yourself and not become ill. That's not the way. So you don't go in there practicing in that until you know you can take it into yourself and offer it up. So the channel works both ways. It works by inhaling another's pain, by pulling it in through the glance into your own heart, and on the exhalation, being able to offer that back up to the source. For all fear being that basis has to be unwrapped, unwound through the Divine Beloved, not the healer. We are merely the instruments, and the further away we can get from the feeling that I am doing anything, the more successful will be our work. With the infants, when they are totally out of rhythm, or with an adult that you can get on his feet and hold his elbows or put your arms around them if they will allow that, turning to the left, counterclockwise, as Pierre has been teaching us to do, because we are following the movements of the planets, the cosmic pattern, where we turn counterclockwise. Turn. Turning has healing in it. The turning of an infant that's teething, that's crying, out of control, can be brought into control just by turning. And you know what it feels like after you turn a while. They're so interested because, wow, that's a funny feeling in my head. You know, I do feel a little dizzy. And then you stop very suddenly, you know, and they look around and they're on a different rhythm, on a different breath. It's stilled them and it's quieted them. And it's made them wonder, what's that feeling that I have inside of me? It entrances them in a way, and it has worked in the infancy center when all other things did not work. Also, there is a time when isolation, that is walking away, is necessary. So many parents of sick children feel that they have to be right there, holding the child, handing the child every moment, because he's going to cry or because he's got a rhythm going that is a repetitive moan or a repetitive cry. Try to change that into a mantra. Sometimes it need not be a spiritual mantra that we know. It may be just something humorous, you know. Dit jat jow and how. Now look at you, pretty soon you're repeating, dit dat jow and how, dit dat jow and how. And all at once, what is that? You know, that rhythm has entranced them. And it's humorous, you know, and you can let them see that sparkle in your eye, but never that they think you're laughing at them. Always it must be with them if you can raise them to that point. The same goes for the patient in the hospital. He needs humor. He needs to have nonsense brought to him. More Dr. Seuss and that type of nonsense thing can cheer up a patient who is chronically ill than any other method I've known. It really works. rather than the off-color joke, which, when the person is very ill, he's no longer tuned to man's sexual symbols, you know, of what is humor. That's totally turned off. They're in a different, on a different sphere, in a different rhythm, on a different breath. So humor is one of the greatest healers in the world. When you are working on people at a distance and they ask you to be healed, or you say to them, may I pray for you? But usually they say, would you mind praying for my mother, or would you pray for me? Unless that person is, the person they're asking for the prayer is beyond the point where they can ask for themselves, you just politely say yes. And then you put that prayer, you offer that prayer up to the Divine Beloved.